Good evening. I know most of you, so welcome. I tend to speak quietly, so if I turn my volume down too low, please let me know. I'd like to dedicate this talk to Blanche Hartman, and I have her book here, Seeds for a Boundless Life. Has anyone read it? Oh my goodness, so. For those of you who don't know Blanche, for me, she's been a real role model for women practicing in America, as well as for many, many other people. She was the first woman co-abbot at San Francisco Zen Center, and I respect her so much. She has a background as a chemist. She had a partner for 63 years in marriage. They had 4 children. And in the midst of all that, you know, she practiced and also participated in protests at San Francisco State in the late 60s. And that had meaning for me as well, because that was my first semester in college in the midst of protests and what's going on, you know. So she was there too. She was also the first sewing teacher at San Francisco Zen Center. And Patrick, I don't know if you were on the field trips where we went up and sewed with Blanche.
Kathy Weldon and I sewed our priest robe with
Blanche. Oh, sweet. And so when I was sewing my Rakasu, Sarah was my sewing teacher, and we did some field trips up there as a group and sewed with Blanche. And I don't know, I haven't been back to the sewing room since then, but it felt like a really special place between floors, like being John Malkovich. You know, there's this place between floors, and it had that quality for me. Is it really between floors? I don't know. It is? Oh, that's why. Okay, so she was also an airplane mechanic during World War II. And again, I just have so much respect for her. So what I gleaned from her book, and I can't tell you how much I enjoyed it. It's a small little book, just came out a while ago. But her message was, life is our teacher. That's what I got from listening to, hearing about her life, that it's a process of awakening in the ground of our everyday life. So, there she was, practicing in the midst of the muddy waters, the midst of the messiness of our life. And I thought that would be a good theme for the discussion tonight. And it actually follows what Gene was talking about last week, because he was talking about, are you awake? Are you awake? And what does that mean? What is the meaning of that? And where I'm going in this direction is, what is the meaning of awakening together? Because it's not just one experience. It's really awakening together in everyday life. And what's the relationship to practicing wholeheartedly? And that's one of my questions I have been carrying since practice began for me, is, what does it mean to practice wholeheartedly? And what does it mean to be awakening together in our everyday life? And how do those fit? So Tuesday morning, we're chanting, And there it was, Dogen's Jujuyu Zamai, self-fulfilling samadhi. And to me, it was like, oh, we chant this on Tuesday. And there it is. So somebody else must have been asking this question. You know, it's not like this question is so terribly unique in the 1200s. And some of this is about, because earth, grass, trees, walls, tiles, and pebbles all engage in Buddha activity. So for me, it's like Buddha nature is awakening together. And when you see it, you know it. You know what that is. You can't always name it, but you know it when you see it. So another part is it's about stillness. It's about zazen. And this being so, the zazen of even one person at one moment imperceptibly accords with all things. So it's also accord. Being right here, right now, in the moment, and there's a feeling of accord with what's happening. And it almost seemed like hearing it again for the first time. Another one that's come up for me in preparing this talk was Araya Mountain Dreamer. I don't know if you've heard of her. She says, "It doesn't interest me where or what or whom you have studied with. I want to know what sustains you from the inside when all else falls away. I want to know if you can be alone with yourself and if you truly like the company you keep in the empty moments." And to me, I thought that was just like zazen. Can you really sit and face the wall? Can I sit and face the wall and be okay with that? Be okay with what arises, and those empty moments are just like zazen. So what are the characteristics of awakening? What are the characteristics of awakening? And what does it mean to practice wholeheartedly? Again, that question arising for me. What does it look like? What does it feel like? And how do we do it? So oftentimes we talk about it, but we don't always say how, because it's a practice, it's an experience, so you can't always name it. Another, you know, of all the stories Blanche has in her book, what stuck out for me was a story about being at Tassajara with Suzuki Roshi, and you know, somebody comes around and rings the bell to wake everybody up for morning zazen, and accidentally or unintentionally got up an hour early and was ringing the bell. And some people went to the zendo and sat, and some people didn't because they realized, oh, it was an hour early. And so what was the right thing to do in that situation? You have dissonance going on. The bell rang, I should get up. It's an hour early, somebody made a mistake. And so this was an example of skillful means for Suzuki Roshi. He admonished people who didn't show up and didn't sit, because when the bell rings, you go sit zazen. And I thought a lot about that, because that might not always be the right response, but it was skillful at the time. And so think about all the situations you or I might have where there's some dissonance going on. Do you always get up? Do you always, what do you listen to? So I thought that was really a good thing to think about. So, you know, what is most skillful at this time? It might not be the right answer another time, but something to think about. So what are the characteristics of awakening? What does it look like? What does it feel like? For me, it's all about paying attention. Finding that sacred and ordinary are not separate. And I'll give you some examples in a minute. It also means to me not being perfect, but being honest. So I have to be honest with myself first before I can be honest with anybody else. And sometimes that's hard. So it's a process of cultivation of mindfulness and compassion. I think about what's beneficial to others, and for me it's really important thinking about taking care of the next generation. There's a quality of impermanence. There's a quality of interconnectedness. There's no separation. And there's also the quality of mystery. So all these things seem to come up together. So what does it mean to practice wholeheartedly? If Zazen is not separate, so practice and realization is not separate, it could be described as a moment of practicing wholeheartedly. If you're really taking what you get from that morning. For me, it's every morning coming here Monday through Friday if I can, and sitting Zazen and taking that with me when I'm on the freeway, when I go to work, interactions. It really flavors the day. And if I don't do it, it really flavors the day. So it's sitting in the middle of the truth, right here, right now, and not judging, just perceiving. The part of the process is getting to the place where there's no gap between what's going on this moment and not separating myself from it. And it has a quality of bearing witness. And Jean talked about completely digesting. So are you completely digesting this moment? It's a dynamic process. So in returning to silence, Katagiri Roshi said, Zazen is the right gate for entering the Buddha Dharma, but the Buddha Dharma is actually human life. You come back to silence. Whatever question you want to study, you cannot study it from your own shallow viewpoint. Finally, you will come to a vastness that is like spring water endlessly coming up out of the earth. The more you study something, the more you realize everything is boundless. And that's the name of Blanche's book, Seeds from a Boundless Life. So I tied it into her words as well. Katagiri Roshi's book, Each Moment is the Universe, he states, in Buddhist history, the word silence corresponds to right view. Seeing impermanence, the truth that everything is appearing, disappearing, and changing from moment to moment. Impermanence is not something you see objectively, it's something you taste directly. Then impermanence makes you silent, because impermanence is very quiet. That silence connects you with a deep sense of human value. So silence is quiet, but there is an enormous voice like thunder there. So the quiet and the thunder of the silence, it's not in the words, it's in the space between the words. It's truth found in the silence. It's the experience of touching the heartstrings and not an intellectual or emotional process. It could include intellectual and emotional, but it's about the heart. And it's also knowing without a doubt completely, and yet the mystery of not knowing and the mystery quality also being there at the same time. It's the spaciousness of not knowing. So I've been asked at work to take on some grad students in learning quality improvement in healthcare, and there's always room for quality improvement. So the difference between what you get in school, the theoretical, and what you learn experientially, the practicum is they work together. It involves risk and involves vulnerability. And it's about practicing together as a sangha, whether it's a sangha at work, a sangha here. It's even cars on the freeway moving together. Same thing. It's awakening together. And what does right effort mean? I think it's more about being complete and having a quality of being beneficial. So one description, I think this is coming out of Katagiri Roshi's book, Each Moment is the Universe. He said, it's like a sculpture. And Michael, maybe you can relate to this. It's like a sculpture. There's always more than one view to broaden the vista. It's an exchange of energy and what others see and the integration of the whole. So I want to give you some examples that I recently experienced about awakening together. And this comes out of a weekend that Patrick and I and about 15 other people from the Sangha and Monterey Sangha had in Tassajara. We had a wonderful day of sitting and being in the community. And I've been going to Tassajara since the late 60s, and I don't get there very often. Sometimes as a student for a couple of weeks in the summer, but I'm looking forward to a practice period there soon, hopefully. So over the years of being in Tassajara, some things stay the same. You always know where something is if you need it or what's happening, and some things change. And so this time, in the morning, in the dark, the morning zazen, I heard some baby sounds. There were baby sounds during morning zazen. I have never heard baby sounds during morning zazen at Tassajara before. And so I listened, and it wasn't a baby crying. It was just baby squeaky noises. And I made up this whole story about this mother taking care of the baby. And, you know, it was just such a beautiful experience to listen to the squeaky baby sounds during morning zazen along with the birds. And I was thinking, what a great mother, you know, bringing her baby to morning zazen, and it was just such a perfect moment. And then we got up, turned around, and it wasn't a mother, it was a father. So I made up this whole story about the mother and the baby. But it was amazing because the baby was all swaddled. And I looked at the baby, and it looked about 6 to 8 weeks old, and found out the baby really was 7 weeks old. And it was just so wonderful to have the baby sounds there. And it was also Mother's Day that Sunday. So it was her very first Mother's Day with this baby. And I have experience in labor and delivery as a nurse, and lots of time teaching people about childbirth and taking care of babies. So I have an affinity for babies. And I went over and talked to the mother, and the baby was over her shoulder, and I was looking at the baby from behind her, and all of a sudden the baby's eyes got really big. And I know that the baby's in this awake, alert state. So babies aren't there all the time, you know, they're there, and you have to catch it when they're there. It's like Buddha nature. It's amazing. It's like all of a sudden they're in this awake, quiet place, and it's a moment to engage. And so I started talking to this baby, "You're awake." And right away the mother, you know, pulled the baby off her shoulder to see what was going on. And the baby and the mother engaged. And the baby smiled at the mother. And that was her Mother's Day gift. Babies don't smile until they're about 6 weeks old. And I remember my baby's first smile. I mean, it's quite a moment. So to me, that was an example of awakening together. It was awakening of the baby, awakening of the mother in the moment. And the mother just being totally there with that baby was so wonderful. So it's a dynamic process. It's ordinary and extraordinary all at the same time. You know, it's just like, wow, did you see that? It's a call and response. And you know it when you see it. And there were no words that could fully describe what I saw. So, yeah. So you have to be present to win. 95% or 90% is showing up. So the Bodhisattva, I want to tell a story about a Bodhisattva. I've been keeping this article for a couple of years, but it's about this 78-year-old man. When he was 14 years old in Australia, he had to have surgery to remove 3/4 of his lung and have 13 transfusions. And when that happened and he survived, he made a vow to donate blood. And he donated 130 gallons of blood. He's 78 now. On his 1,108th donation, he was honored. They didn't call him a bodhisattva, but I thought, wow, he's a bodhisattva, right? And 108 comes up. Isn't that interesting? We have 108 bells sometimes. So anyway, it was 1,108 donations at the age of 78. And what's amazing about this story, and I tie it into awakening together, is he has O negative blood. And so there was a special Rh factor in there in his O negative blood that was used to create a vaccine to protect babies. So if you have an Rh negative blood and Rh positive blood interacting, sometimes babies can get very sick. And so before they had this vaccine, babies could die or be very sick. So they used his Rh factor and created 2 million doses of the vaccine using the plasma pooled. So he was giving back. He was giving back to all those babies. and no compensation. He calls himself just an ordinary Joe. I thought that was pretty good. You know, I mean, isn't that sacred and ordinary at the same time? And it's awakening together. So, another example of awakening together is this book, One Breath Becomes Air. Anybody read this one? Yeah. It's an amazing book. Oh, I highly recommend One Breath Becomes Air. So it's a story about a neurosurgeon who gets diagnosed with cancer and how it changes his practice. And to me, it was so meaningful because he was only seeing a part of the picture until he got sick. You know, when he became sick, it totally changed how he practiced. So, how he related to patients, to me was a full expression of being there in the moment, both as a patient and as a surgeon. Another example is Frank Ostasevsky. Yeah, you know him. So he started the San Francisco Zen Center Hospice Project in the 70s when AIDS became a problem. And I heard him speak when I was working at hospice a couple of times. And if you ever get a chance to hear Frank, he's just amazing because he can be in a room with 150 people and it's as if he's speaking just to you. He has that quality about him. And one of the things I remember from his talk is he said, when you're working with people that are dying, save 50% of the awareness at the bedside for yourself. How important that is, you know, to check in with yourself and save 50% of your awareness for what's going on in here right now. To me, that is also a place to awaken together, you know, when you're at the bedside. So in summary, how am I doing? Oh, good. In summary, I just want to summarize what my thoughts are. We awaken together. It's not over there. It's this dynamic interaction. It's a process. It's a practice. It's being in alignment with the present moment. It's dynamic, it's interconnected, it's ordinary and extraordinary. I also see it as a recognition or a recognition of Buddha nature in the midst of everyday life. It's there all the time. Those flowers that Liz puts on the altar, and then you get up and after morning zazen and you see those flowers and they're just Buddha nature showing up. They're beautiful. So it's there all the time, but we don't always notice, so I have to pay attention. And just to leave one other thought is about, I've been thinking about Catherine. I always think about Catherine. And what comes through is her intention was always to be helpful and encourage people. That was really a root message from her. So think about, I'd like you to hopefully have a dialogue about this, but what supports your practice? You know, what is most helpful and what encourages others? What supports your practice? What encourages you? And what's been ordinary and extraordinary in your life? We all have it. Any thoughts?
I like curators of traffic, of vehicle for awakening. On one hand, it's very irritating, and I think that can be kind of a mindfulness spell. Just the fact that as people together, we agree to, stay within the lines when we drive and slow down when we need to slow down, move over when we need to move over. That really is a good example of the ordinary being extraordinary and everyone kind of putting their awakened nature
how important it is to come here as often as you can in the mornings to fulfill your practice. What? How would that change if all of a sudden you found out you couldn't come here in the mornings? What would happen to your practice? How would you address that?
Well, I had about 3 months where 3 weeks where I couldn't roll over in bed because I hurt my back. And then about 3 months where I had to use a walker. And the thing that really helped me the most was being able to do zazen in bed when I couldn't move. There was no place to go. There was no place to hide. It was just being with my breath. That's all. What about you?
Oh. I have some questions. Actually, I've been sort of avoiding this place over the last year or two frequently in the mornings, and so I guess I just try to be more mindful when I'm in traffic and take that practice out instead of here in the mornings and just try to pay attention, be mindful.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to come back in the mornings.
It's good to see you in the morning. Richard.
So you have just inspired me not to come at 5:30. But the idea, which I certainly have been aware of, thinking about it and wanting to do it, but now I'm going to make a commitment. I get up at a totally different time. But I'm not going to do anything until I do some form of meditation before I start my day. Mm-hmm. In terms of the whole, array of gratitude and welcoming my day and having that kind of step back moment. I haven't been doing it, but you're talking now. I'm making a vow.
It perfumes the day. It flavors the day. Yeah. Liz.
On the circle today, seeing this picture in the media, this German man holding the baby that had drowned. It was amazing to see the look on his face, looking at the baby, holding the baby.
Yeah.
And just that, and the tenderness with which he held the baby. It's just kind of like what matters, It's Kind of one of those moments of cutting through. I was just grateful that he let himself be captured on film holding that baby. And
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was just, yeah.
Yeah. There are no words to fill that. Just holding it. It's bearing witness. Yeah.
Joyce and I will start most meals with just asking each other, who and what are you grateful for right now? And that brings to mind just lots of things we are grateful for, some of them very small. Obviously each other, obviously this place, obviously this practice, but then it goes on from there. But it's a good place to start wherever and just be mindful of that. And then before we go to sleep, we do it ourselves, but we always ask, what are we grateful for this day past? And that's a nice way to start a night's sleep for us.
Yeah. Ordinary and extraordinary.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of starts out ordinary and it gets extraordinary quite quickly.
Yeah.
A lot of wonder in it. A wonder in love.
Wonderful. Harley.
When you mentioned awakening together, the first thing that comes to mind is awakening with other people. And then soon after that, you mentioned the trees and the pebbles and the grass. Mm-hmm. So it's always good to remind each other, always awakening together with all things. Nature, for example. So mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
We have a new mother soon in the room. How exciting.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll bring your baby to Zazen. At Tassajara, the father said that they had brought the baby since 12 days of age to morning Zazen. Pretty special baby. It was the best Mother's Day. It was wonderful. Yeah. Anyone else? No? So, please take care of this precious gift of being present and awake. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to become